Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Nonproductive. Tonight, we are going to be talking about often overlooked horror movies that you may have often overlooked.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, right. I'm Frank. I'm joined in studio by Al, Nate, and Big Papa Pete. How are you folks doing?
I'm all right.
I'm having a good night.
I'm overlooking a horror movie that I've overlooked before.
How dare you?
Okay.
Yes, as a way of starting Geektoberfest, we are going to talk about some of our favorite horror movies that we think, you know, occasionally get overlooked or underrepresented in like top 10 lists on the internet. All right, so everyone's assignment was to find a couple of horror movies that they really feel passionate about and they want to educate the rest of us on. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to go ahead and say that there's a film I kind of want to talk about, but I don't feel like it's talked about on this station very often.
Mm-hmm.
Return of the Living Dead.
I've never heard of that film. We have never once spoken of it.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
I feel like there are probably several interviews we've done with cast members over the years about this seminal work of zombie. Seminal and zombie are not two words I want to put together in the future, but whatever. This seminal work in zombie filmmaking. But yeah, explore. What was it you called it? Return of the Living Dead?
Yes.
Starting strong on this overlooked horror movie podcast. No, but seriously, some people
I feel it is often overlooked because it's like it's was sort of a pseudo sequel to like the Night of the Living Dead before George, like not before, but instead of the George Romero films.
That's true. It isn't actually in the Romero verse, which is a word that is almost intolerable to say. Not that I don't like George Romero, it's just
But it made a lot of interesting references to the first film in the beginning of the film, and it was just really cool because I like their idea of zombie was just the impossible to kill zombie. It was like, oh, I hit it in the head. Whatever, it's still walking. I cut it into pieces. Whatever, the hand's still coming after you and all this other
stuff. That's true.
Like, and it was the first time where zombies were like brains and needed brains. It was when they arose from the graves and like skeleton. Like, it was weird. It made no sense because like it was like this weird chemical thing. Like, it wasn't magic or anything. But it worked like magic. It was just like, there was no reason. You can't scientifically explain why this hand has like sentience and is chasing you down for your brains.
Yeah.
But it was fantastic because it seemed so insurmountable. There was no grab chainsaws and go to work. It was, we're dead. It was just the slow, eventual, we're all going to die. And that was just awesome. And a great sense of humor about it, too.
Awesome. Fun soundtrack.
Yep.
A lot of interesting rules were set up in that movie that we've kind of just adopted as a given. Most notably, the zombies eat brains thing.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that is a zombie movie that people do not pay nearly enough attention to. And it's one of our favorites. So we had a soft one right off the bat. That's a nice way to set the pace of this. Does anyone have another horror movie, perhaps one that's a little deeper cut?
Well, the movie I actually want to talk about is not so much because the movie itself is particularly good. I mean, it's not a horrible movie, but it's exactly kind of what you think it is. It's called Crybaby Lane, and it's actually from, I do believe, 1999, or at least late 90s. And it was put out by Nickelodeon. So
Nickelodeon put out a horror movie.
Well,
in the 90s.
They put out a new horror movie every year for Halloween.
Oh, I guess if you call those horror movies,
well,
sure.
Yeah, are they really horror movies? No. Are they scary movies? If you're nine, maybe. This was like one of the better ones, so I'm told. I haven't watched a lot of the early Nickelodeon horror movies, but I'm told it's definitely up there because it came out in mid October. October 21st, something like that, but not actually on Halloween. And a bunch of parents called in and they talked about how their kids had nightmares, the standard fare where parents complain. And Nick decided to just pretend the movie never existed and completely cut their losses.
Really?
Yes, the movie was never released on VHS, DVD, anything like that. In fact, there was actually kind of a weird thing where if every time it was edited onto their Wikipedia page, it would mysteriously vanish within a week.
So you're telling me that Nickelodeon had, a long history of, like, corny, fake kids' Halloween films. actually put out something that was so terrifying, they had to erase the history of it. And then there was like the secret conspiracy, possibly ghost magic, that prevent it from being documented anywhere.
Well, that's the thing is at the time, and I remember being in high school and being really into this because, you know, I just thought it was neat that there was this movie that they refused to let people, remember existed. And at the time, it was like, I don't know if people are just kind of screwing around and taking it down to further the legend. But then in 2011, I do believe, yeah, because it was right before I moved to China, 2011, somebody actually found the movie on a VHS at a yard sale. And so they uploaded it to YouTube. And
this sounds like an urban legend. I know.
Yeah. Wasn't this movie originally called Candle Cove?
yeah. No, it's the remake. Oh. You can find all of this on the internet. I swear it's true. You can find it on the Wikipedia page, probably, I guess. And within 24 hours of it being uploaded to YouTube, Nickelodeon copyright claimed it.
Oh, wow.
So it went down and it went down and it went down. And eventually, you know, you just had to, like, download it from somebody's Dropbox. And I think it's actually up on YouTube now. I think eventually they did just kind of give up because everybody, by that point, everybody was like, no, we found the movie. We're going to share it. It had this whole cult following by that point of this is the movie that no one could find. No one recorded
so
this movie.
Horrible.
It aired one time. Mm-hmm. They never put it on VHS. They refused to acknowledge
it.
If you died after watching it. If you emailed them and asked like, hey, are you ever going to put this movie out? Or, hey, I'm interested. They would completely ignore you. It was such this cultural phenomenon, you know, a very select kind of horror movie geeks who were like, where's the movie? Why can't we find it?
That's so weird, though. Like, it's like you got to expect, like, so many, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark clearly gave kids nightmares. Like, it had to.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But to sit there and be like, no, this one movie, man, we can't own that. Like, that's too much. We straight up did some stupid stuff in that. Like, I mean, like, what's in this movie? Do you, like, have, like, a kid getting, like, dropped into, like, vats of oil and you see flesh melting off of him?
Well, what the movie's actually about, just very kind of basically, is it's called Crybaby Lane, which would let you think it's about that, like, crossing where, you know, if you stop on the railroad tracks, you'll get handprints on the back of your car,
yeah,
because that's what that is.
Where you get
it's not about that. It's actually completely irrelevant. The name of the movie is actually totally irrelevant.
There's no lane. There's no baby.
The lane is not relevant. There's really no baby. I mean, there is kind of a baby, but they don't stay a baby for more than 5 seconds.
Is it a cry?
No, not really. There was like an evil twin and a good twin, and they were Siamese twins, so they were like fused. And one of them died, and the other one, the good twin, I think, didn't. And then, twin died because the evil twin died and got sick, and then they got buried together.
That's a horrible reason being evil, just for dying inappropriately. That was a very inconvenient time to die.
It was the twin on the left side.
So they came back to, like, haunt this house that was, like, in the walls and stuff like that.
Was the good twin forced to haunt as well because they were just attached to the other ghost?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my.
So basically the premise is, you know, it's a Nick movie. There's a spooky ghost. I'm pretty sure that's actually based on, like, some vague story I do remember hearing about Victorian era where something like that happened.
So
that's an episode of that was The Simpsons.
I think that's actually based on a real thing, too, though. I think that this is something, like, there was actually, like, a Siamese twin where one of them died and the other one died because they were attached to a dead person.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that happened at some point.
Happens, yeah.
Also, I believe they prefer to be called conjoined twins.
Conjoined, I'm sorry. Mm. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
You're absolutely correct.
But
hillbillies would prefer to be called Sons of the Soil, but it ain't going to happen.
So, in other words, this movie was actually, like, scrubbed off the history books because it was terrible.
Basically,
because it drops Siamese twins every 5 seconds.
It absolutely used the word Siamese twins every 5 seconds. It follows
Mystery
a child. And his older brother, who have sibling rivalry, and for some reason, this 10-year-old kid is super BFFs with the mortician down the street, who tells them this horrible story and shows them a grave, and then I don't know what happens from there.
Like, straight up is like, hey guys, you want to check out this grave?
That is absolutely what happens.
Can I actually just say that this is not, like, the first time Nickelodeon has buried something for being too terrifying for children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, check out almost all of their early programming. Today's special.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you can't do
where
this
the where the mannequins come to life every
There's
night.
There's a special kind of fear of that, yeah.
Pinwheel with its terrifying puppets.
I don't know. I love that.
Oh, you guys. Oh, you can't do that on television?
That's interesting.
You can't do that on television. Television had Alanis Morissette to comfort us.
Too many Canadians. Canadians. All right. That's an interesting story, Nate. It actually reminds me of a different story. So I'm going to worm this one in.
What story is that, Frank?
So back in the days, I'd like some theme music right now.
Back in my day.
That's right. In the early days, before there was an internet.
Shoo-bop, shoo-bop.
Actually, I don't even know if this was really pre-internet, but it was like pre-social shoo-bop, network, shoo-bop. The whole world connected. I had a side gig as a kid. Oh, this is so embarrassing. Somehow along the line, I got a reputation for being the person who could find a piece of media that no one has ever heard of. So, before the internet, this was a more common phenomenon,
right,
where you saw something or played something or whatever when you were a kid, and you only remember pieces of it, and you don't quite remember the entire thing, but you keep telling people about it, and no one knows what you're talking about.
I was in a similar place to you. I know what you're talking about, Frank.
You know that situation,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I distinctly remember having long conversations with the older kids at the video rental store, trying to like unravel these mysteries of these like cable shows we
what
or
was
movies
the name of that
day.
Show
yeah what was the name of that movie, was this a real thing, did I dream it? And oftentimes you'd watch these movies like secretly late at night without anybody knowing, so you'd only get pieces of it in the first place.
This kind of thing, by the way, is why the Candle Cove creepypasta works,
right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah It just sort of like worms its way into your head. So one of the things I was very good at uncovering, and this wasn't the first thing, but it just like whoever these people are who are out there desperate to find this one TV show they watched as a kid, they somehow found me. I think at the time it was like a Yahoo message board group or something like that. And I would get requests where people would describe the thing and I try to figure it out and do my own research. And the one I'm remembering right now for our horror themed show is a episode of the ABC weekend special called Red Room Riddle. And in this story, it was about a young boy. I barely remember it. It was a young boy who's moving into a neighborhood, or he and his friend are in this neighborhood, and there's that haunted house in the neighborhood that everybody dares each other to go touch the door, knock on the door or whatever. And they try to do that. They try to get there's a series of dares happen, and those kids end up trapped in the house for a time. And the way ABC Weekend Special worked, for those of you who don't know, is like early 80s. It would air on television, and it would usually be like a multi-part story based on a book. So if you missed one week, you'd have to wait until it re-aired in its entirety.
Which it just didn't do.
Yeah, it didn't do in any kind of reliable way. So and of course these things would end on cliffhangers, and specifically the cliffhanger that was described, there's a point where the kids who are trapped in the house see a room that's it's entirely red. Everything is red. And then there's like a weird filter that shows up over the camera where everything looks red. And then there was maybe a dragon or a devil dog or something that comes out of the house and tries to kill them and possibly does kill them.
I'm These imagining are the pieces a tasty of cake, memory. By the way.
And this is all I had to go with. I found a copy of the Red Room Riddle, a VHS copy that a library that wasn't in my local library had. I had it interlibrary loaned to my library. Then I have two VCRs matched up in tandem, made a copy of the tape because it was obviously a produced copy of the tape, but it wasn't something you could just buy in the store anymore.
Yeah. Right.
Nobody was producing it anymore. And
so you felt justified.
I felt justified. Also, you know, I rob people all the time at gunpoint. So it's fine. And had to mail the VHS tape to this person who was looking for the film. So I'm seeing it on YouTube now. And what's happened is I can't be 100% certain of this, but I'm pretty certain a lot of the things I see on YouTube, they're like these rare things no one's ever heard of. I think a decent amount of them have come from my recovered VHS tapes.
It's like, I'm pretty sure I remember that skip.
Yeah. Things like
that's
that.
Amazing.
So it's interesting. I can't remember how the story ends, but I do remember, I will say this. I was old enough when I found the VHS that when I watched it, and I was really excited to see this like creepy thing, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, well, that's all.
Do you want to know what the ending is?
Sure.
Turns out the room is actually blue and black.
No!
Topical.
There you go.
No,
not even.
Yeah. So yes, I also have an experience of watching or having like frightening memories of a thing from childhood that was probably not that frightening.
Did they mention Siamese twins like every other?
I'm sure they use a bunch of other racial slurs or actual racial slurs. I don't know what they did. It was the 80s.
It was the 80s. Yeah.
I'm sure somebody was called something inappropriate.
Oh my.
All right. Anyone else got one? Pete, do you have something?
I do have one. I have one that was one of the first indie horror films, low release films that I ever really got into. I've never been a big horror guy,
mm-hmm.
But I over the years, especially working with the Lad Idiots, I've slowly kind of gotten into it. And one of the first ones that hooked me was a film from 2002 called May. Starring Angela Bettis, Jeremy Sisto was in it also.
Uh-huh.
And a young Anna Faris.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Was what year was this again?
This was 2002.
So this was post Scary Movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Actual Scary Movie, post Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by Lucky McPhee. And not Anna Faris, Angela Bettis is the star, the titular May, who is kind of a socially outcast girl, a lot of social problems.
Right.
Likes making dolls. That's that's pretty much all I'll say about it. But it's a very interesting psychological kind of horror piece.
How so?
I don't know how to answer that question.
And that there probably aren't a lot of zombies and ghosts.
Yeah.
All right.
No zombies, no ghosts.
I'm imagining it's just...
It's about your fears interacting with other people and what can go wrong and trust issues.
That's
very cool. I can't say an awful lot without giving the plot away, which I don't want to do.
Right.
Because watching this whole thing unravel, and it's not particularly difficult to guess where it's going to go, but seeing the process is what really makes this film.
That's interesting. So it's not, you wouldn't quite call it like a series of twist endings in it or anything like that, but
no,
but it's just creepy.
Yeah.
All right.
It's I would almost describe it, you go in there knowing that it's a horror movie and expecting a horror movie. Then it's like watching a train crash in slow motion.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
It's like you know what the end result is going to be. Hmm. And you just see it unraveling slowly. Everything unravels very slowly, and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Hmm. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think I've seen this movie. So I looked up the cover.
Yeah.
I think I've seen this movie, and all I'll say is that I think when I first saw it, I was under the impression it was like got like an indie romance film, you know, like with an awkward protagonist.
Yeah, I was going to say it starts off an awful lot like She's All That.
Okay, yeah.
And the fact that at that time Angela Bettis looked a lot like Rachel Lee Cook.
Uh-huh.
And just based on the cover... That's an easy way to...
Because I remember a few hard rights where I'm like, this is not a romance.
Yeah, she kind of looks like a goth.
Yeah, yeah.
A goth version of Rachel Lee Cook from She's All
Right. I'm going to give it a shot because I don't think I saw... I don't think I watched the entire thing. I think I got really disturbed at one point because there's... It's like, you ever drink a glass of milk and it, or think you're drinking a glass of milk and it turns out it's a glass of orange juice.
Yeah.
You know that feeling like, oh God, what did I do? that moment that I remember hits me at a particular time in this film. So yeah, not only do we recommend you watch it, but we recommend you watch it with a loved one who doesn't know what it's about because screw your loved ones.
There you go. Good
suffer.
Way of putting it.
All right. Al, you did mention something in pre-production that I've seen most of those films had never heard of them referred to in that way. Can you help us
with
that?
Yeah, I was talking about the the John Carpenter kind of trilogy, which was the Apocalypse trilogy, where there was The Thing, there was In the Mouth of Madness, and the one in between those, which I think is underappreciated, is Prince of Darkness.
All right, first explain, because I'm decently certain most people who are even remotely interested in horror have probably seen The Thing already, at least.
Yeah.
What do you mean by Apocalypse Trilogy? Because that's the part I've never heard of
before.
Well,
they were three films that Carpenter did that were essentially just, he was making the end of the world. And it was basically, they didn't all take place in the same universe. It was just three different ways that he saw the world ending, mm-hmm. or like he came up with it. It was three different apocalypse, that's the plural on that. Apocalypses. Yeah. That he came up with. And the first one was just, you know, Alien. It was The Thing. And the second was Prince of Darkness, where, you know the anti-god sort of shows up and like, well, it's the end of times now. And then the third one was Cthulian Horror.
That's In the Mouth of Madness, yeah. Right?
And I think it's a shame Prince of Darkness kind of gets the shaft a lot of the time, because The Thing is such a fantastic film. And while I'll definitely agree that, like, yeah, he kind of nailed it the first time, and it kind of steadily got worse from there. I feel like while In the Mouth of Madness is kind of a crap film, it is, unfortunately. It has a lot of great ideas, but it's a terrible film. Prince of Darkness, it hits a nice middle ground where it's not bad and certainly good. It's not as, you know, fantastic, amazing, could watch a million times as The Thing is, but I feel like Prince of Darkness is just not talked about enough, and it's a great film. It is. It's really good.
And it's like religious horror. It's a religious apocalypse.
Yeah, it's about, what happens is that there's a bunch of people, they're all scientists, and the church says, listen, we have this thing that in it we believe we have contained, like, the Prince of Darkness. In here we think we think it's, you know, the end of the world. We think that Satan is within here and so on and so forth. And we need you to study this, because we've kept it secret for so many years, and we feel like, you know,
yeah, screw it. Time to study it.
It's time to, well, like, it is. Like, it, like, at some point they're like, you know, science has kind of advanced a little bit. We should probably have them look at this thing that exudes evil and entropy wherever it goes.
I do have an advanced degree in evil, so yeah. I'll look into this. Thank you.
So, but it's interesting because they begin to study it, and then they get a VHS tape at one point, which comes from the future and warns them about, like, it sounds hokey, but it is, and that's one of the few little tiny problems with the film, is that it is a little hokey, but they get a VHS from the future that's basically telling them, like, hey, the world is going to end, and we need you to stop it, and it's because of this thing, and it has a shot of the church that they're doing this study in, and a figure is walking out, and the tape keeps getting blurred, and they keep trying to, like, sort it so they can see more from it. Like, they study the, I'm misremembering. A tape doesn't just fall out of it. They're studying the thing, and they're, like, slowly but surely, like, this image is coming from it, and it's warning them of the future and how the end of the world is coming from this, and they have to prevent it. And it's sort of the opposite film of The Thing, where you're not sure what's, you know, the evil is, like, everyone's unaware of it, and it's sort of, that's like 10 little Indians sort of right. One person getting axed off. Like this, it's very much the cast is there, they're aware the end is coming, and it's this whole, like, it's a slow burn, but in a very different way.
Yeah, I've never even heard of this film. I'll admit something, I'm a huge Lovecraft fan, that's not what I'm admitting.
Yeah,
I guess I should these days, but I've never seen In the Mouth of Madness all the way through. It always gave me the opinion, like the impression that it wasn't that great of a Lovecraft
it's
story.
It's not. Or, I mean, it's especially since it ducks out into this weird, like, Stephen King parody film.
Yeah,
that's also,
it seems odd. It seemed odd, but at least I've heard of it. Prince of Darkness, I have never heard of. And this is like 87. This is like 5 years after The Thing. So you think. All right, so I'm definitely interested.
Oh, definitely watch
it.
It's a really good film, and it's very scary, actually, which you wouldn't think. I can't really say why things get scarier, why the tension keeps getting amped up and up, because it's giving things away like it would be in a thing.
It's fair. Mm-hmm. You've definitely got my attention.
Yeah. But it's a really interesting film.
I got another one. This one's probably a little bit more well known, but I still think it's fairly underappreciated and should get more attention. And a lot of people haven't heard of it. But it's slowly gaining a bigger following. Let me ask you something. Have you ever watched an episode of Degrassi and said, you know what? This could do with more werewolves.
Absolutely. Yes.
Every time.
Every time I've had to watch that, and I watched an earlier version of Degrassi than some of the listeners may have heard, I have thought more werewolves.
Frank, you need to watch Ginger Snaps.
All right. I've heard of this film. I don't know. Actually, to be honest, I thought it was set in the Middle Ages, but that might be a sequel.
Yeah, that,
that was
a sequel.
One of the sequels.
Okay.
Yeah.
There have been a couple sequels since. None of them really captured what was great about the first one. But just the fact that they got made at all, I think it's fabulous. Ginger Snaps is the, and I'll give you the short pitch, because really it's all you need. It's a story about two girls who were in Canada, grew up in a very sheltered household, conservative household. They weren't told an awful lot about the way, you know, the birds and the bees work and everything.
Oh, all right, yeah.
And, you know, young teenage girls and the older of the two sisters gets her first period.
Okay.
Okay. And on the same day, she's bitten by a werewolf.
Oh, gosh.
So there's an allegory here.
Uh-huh.
I don't see it.
It's less of an like allegory and more of a exploration of this, well, if you don't give people the right information... She doesn't know what's what.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
She doesn't know the mechanics of everything.
That's hilarious.
And there's this, she doesn't understand what changes are coming about because of what.
Oh, no.
All right. That's awesome.
And it's, that's really all you need to know about it. And it's the aftermath of that.
Yeah. All right. So it's
very interesting. And from there, it takes the promise of that and makes good on it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just a high concept,
right,
if you want to call it that, thing that doesn't deliver.
I wasn't, but
it delivers, and it's not. It's hard to say. I don't know if I'm describing it crudely.
I just imagine,
but it's not handled crudely. It's not crude humor.
I just imagine the scene from American Werewolf in London, where instead of the guy transforming, it's a woman, and it's like, I'm becoming a woman now.
It's semi what it is.
Why?
Maybe not quite as stupid.
No, it's not that stupid, but this is not happening in a world where, you know, werewolves are commonplace.
Gotcha.
You know, werewolves are legends, like in the real world.
I gotcha. Oh my god, that's hysterical though. Jesus.
Interesting. I would see. I always just assumed it was a sexy werewolf movie. I never thought it'd have this layer to it, so I'm curious to watch it.
It's not very sexy.
Yeah.
There's, you know, a little bit of it, but as far as horror movies go, this definitely doesn't fall on the really sexy.
So it's not a Friday the 13th, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess it's a teenage sex romp movie.
Yeah.
Very good. Nate, do you have another one for us?
You know, I'm a big fan of Korean horror movies. I mean, a lot of people are. There's a lot of really, really solid Korean horror films out there. One I saw really recently was called The Silenced. It came up on Netflix. I'd never heard of it before. It had a ton of stars. And I was like, all right. And it was a really interesting movie with this really, really slow build of kind of red herring stuff going on all over the place. And you're not quite sure what's going on until like the very end, and you are absolutely not prepared for what it actually ends up being. There's physically no way for you to know what it is. Like, it's definitely all there. It's not like, oh, it's a total left turn. It's just, oh, this is really not what I have been taught by horror movies to expect from scenarios like this. And it was really, really cool.
That's neat.
It had really interesting characters. It was about a lot of, it was about a lot of preteen kind of, or teenage girls. Teenage girls?
Yeah. They're precisely preteens.
Probably 15, 16, I guess, actually, in retrospect. So it's a lot of girls. They're living in a boarding school during Korea during the occupation. So there's a lot of things going on, like a lot of different conflicting elements. There's people that, you know, the girls don't talk about. There's the rules they're living under and then rules that they put upon themselves. And you don't always know which ones are which, you know, which ones the school have put on them, which are the things the girls themselves have just promised never to speak of again. There's all these different kind of things of, is this a spooky ghost or is this girls are mean? there's a romance plot between two of the girls going on that's really cool. There's a lot of really interesting kind of things.
Seems like it's really deep.
Yeah. It's a really deep movie. It's not as fun of a romp as, you know, like a lot of older or 80s horror movies can be. It's definitely kind of a psychological horror movie. It's got some jump scares in it. But it was definitely like the first movie I sat down in a while and was like, wow, this is really scary.
So it's no Crybaby Lane.
No, it does not quite measure up to that level of what am I watching? But, you know, it was really solid. Yeah. Really interesting.
It was actually a really good film.
It was a really good movie.
Yeah.
All right. So I know you're all in suspense for the film I want to talk about.
Yes, Frank.
But we're out of time. So, no, I'm joking. So, it's always harder to determine what you, the listener, thinks is a deep cut. Like, I don't know if we're right. If we just described your last Netflix queue. But the film I want to talk about that I think most of the people, at least at the table, have not seen is a Spanish language film called The Orphanage. It came out around 2007 by J.A. Bayona. This movie is what I would call a classic ghost story. And by that, I mean it's probably unlike most of the horror films you will have ever seen, especially those that feature ghosts. In fact, I'm almost hesitant to call this a horror movie, because while there are certainly many frightening elements in the story, and you should go in there expecting a horror movie, don't go in there expecting like a romantic comedy, the real terrifying thing that happens throughout the narrative isn't necessarily the supernatural and how it affects us directly. Mm-hmm. It's more about the mortality of man. And it is terrifying, sad, sweet, and just totally unexpected. It follows the main character who, her name is Laura. She, along with her husband and son, they buy a house, which I believe, and this, it's been years since I've seen it, but I believe the house was the orphanage she grew up in. Like, it's since been shut down and repurposed, and she bought it. And I think her intent is to make it a home for, like, disabled children. When they're in the home, it's clear that there are spirits in the house, and it's the typical horror movie. The spirits in the house are, of course, creepy children. And that those spirits are affecting the family in some way, especially her son. The son goes missing at some point during the plot, and that's what the majority of the story is. It's a lot like Poltergeist in that the main character, the little girl, goes missing, and that drives a lot of the action and the tension of what's going to happen, and do the supernatural creatures out there have an effect on our world? Can they kill people? Are they after us? Will she get her child back? It's the classic story of them versus us, the supernatural versus this mother trying to protect her child, but it turns the entire thing on its head. It is a beautiful film. Go in there expecting a ghost story, watch it, and then come back and comment on this podcast, because I really want to know what people think. I think it's one of my... It may actually be one of my favorite movies.
Wow.
It's really, really, really good. My only issue with it, it's not even an issue with the film. I like it so much. I kind of want to show it to people who would have problems with a subtitled film. So it becomes a kind of a issue. Do I want to give them the dubbed version? Do I want to force them to read along or read it to them if they can't?
It's a tough one.
It's the perennial problem of a foreign film, but or a film that's foreign to the people you want to see it. But The Orphanage, an amazing movie that I think one of the threads that takes us through all the movies we talked about is that there has to be something about it, either anecdotal from your personal history, like Crybaby Lane, or just like something about the film itself that has to take the genre and twist it around and give you something you didn't expect. If it's not something different, it's not going to be scary anymore. I just think we as an audience have become too familiar with the classics, the classic stories out there. If you're not getting something completely different and unexpected, I don't think you get something that's scary.
I don't know if I completely agree with that, though. I feel like there are definitely films out there that do the formula well. And I feel like if you do the formula well enough, you can succeed. I feel like, I mean, I know I've seen haunted house movies that are very similar to other haunted house films, but they're still good. They're still great haunted house films. And I feel like when they try to be different is when they start to fail.
It depends on whether you want to be scared, whether you want the horror movie to scare you, I think. As opposed to taking you to a dark place. Yeah. Crimson Peak recently was probably the most recent retread I can think of a real haunted house movie.
Right.
And didn't scare me for a second, really. But it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I hear.
just watching it, it was like watching a beautiful painting unfold with, you know, a very macabre subject matter. I would say it's good, but it didn't scare me.
Yeah, for me, like I agree with Pete because I'm when I think back at any modern attempt to do a, let's say, a universal horror film, they could be loving like tributes to it, including like Bram Stoker's Dracula, the famed remake.
Oh God, no, Frank! It's more than 20 years ago.
I know it's really a lot. It's been a while, but it's beautiful, and
yes.
You could salute it as an homage. I don't know if I've actually watched that and am scared of it at all, even 20 years ago when I saw it.
Can I just say something about that? A quick tangent?
Sure.
I recently, just this past weekend, as a matter of fact, watched a little bit of it, and I forgot, or I didn't realize at the time, just how painfully obvious it is during the train scenes that is a model train.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was it looked like a fairly well-constructed model train set, but it was obviously a model train set.
Brief aside, that actually might be an effect of the quality of film we're seeing these days. Often you'll see movies that looked good in their original special effects when remastered, let's say, in Blu-ray or whatever.
I was watching, I was trying out the HD capabilities on my system.
And it brings out all those, try watching the original Spider-Man, the movie in Blu-ray. You're like, wow, that is obvious.
Yeah.
I have owned The Amazing Spider-Man, the original 2001 Spider-Man movie on Blu-ray for at least 7 years now. I still haven't watched it.
Yeah. It's hard. I don't think Al's wrong. It just can't immediately think of any examples where, like, all right, this is a good standard type of horror movie that fits a certain framework that I think, you know, does a great job of doing it.
You know what I think it is you can make a really solid movie and maybe even a scary movie, you know, if you're following the formula, but what you can't really make is a really memorable movie, you know? They don't always stick to you. Like Crimson Peak, so I'm told, was a really fantastic movie by the people who went to see it. They say it wasn't scary, but it was really good. But how often do people talk about Crimson Peak? And that was made by, you know, huge popular people.
Yeah.
And I think that one is on top of the, you know, you can make a solid horror movie following the formula, but people aren't really going to feel the need to talk about it because there's really nothing to say.
I don't know. I mean, you look at the terrible freaking franchise, Paranormal Activity.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but people are talking about those films, and I don't necessarily agree that they're great films, all of them. I'll agree that maybe one or two of them are actually pretty good. Like, I remember really enjoying 3, but beyond that, I don't really remember anything else.
I think that feeds what Nate is saying, because, like, I think the first movie comes out and is somewhat memorable. And then the rest of them were like, yeah, it's a movie where there's video cameras.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I remember when the first Paranormal Activity came out, I went to see it in theaters, and it was absolutely something new because nothing happened until the very end of the movie. And you didn't see stuff like that at the time. It was totally new to see this movie in this format. This, you know, people had been doing the Blair Witch style kind of found footage movies, but this was the first time anybody actually really tried to do it again in the actual formula. And they, you know, they had that low tonal thing that really only worked in the theaters, where it would kind of, you would feel it in your spine, you know, and that was done really well. And I mean, I didn't really like the movie, but it was original. Everything after that succeeds because it's in that formula of the original, the same way you'll get sequels and sequels to the same movies.
It'll make money, but it doesn't necessarily make memories.
Yes.
I was going to bring up the Blair Witch Project. I don't think Paranormal Activity was original at all.
No.
It kind of departed from Blair Witch in that it gave a bit more of a plot. But yeah, the Blair Witch Project is, I think, the perfect example of that, where it was crap. I mean, the Blair Witch Project was a great big steaming pile of crap, but it was a pile of crap that was unlike anything anybody had ever crapped before.
I'm going to cry.
And everybody was standing around looking at that piece of crap saying, wow, I've never seen a piece of crap before. And that's why people are still talking about that piece of crap.
You know, I actually want to contribute just a little anecdote to this. Blair Witch Project is my favorite horror movie. And most of that is probably, I mean, nowadays I watch the movie and I'm like, yeah, this is really good. This is really solid. I can watch this all the time. But most of the reason why it's so terrifying to me is that when I was like 12, I saw this movie because my dad saw it in theaters and he was like, oh, you gotta watch the movie, it's so good, you love the scary movies, Tiny Nate.
I'm just
and
gonna was, assume that's what your father actually sounds
this
like.
This is exactly what my father sounds like. You don't know. Wait, yes, you do. You've met my dad. So I saw the movie, and then it's pretty late, and I went to take a shower, and when I got out, he had piled rocks all over like the bathroom and just all over the bedroom, all over the house. There were little piles of rocks.
That's pretty effing
mean. I woke up the next morning, and there were piles of rocks all throughout my room. There were lots of little stick men that he had made. He'd been up like all night doing this. He put a pile of rocks on my feet so that when I woke up, I would knock them over. And I'm like 11. I cried for like an hour.
Wow. All right. So my story makes me feel much better about my story with the Blair Witch Project. I brought my older sister to see it when it was in theaters, and I did never told her it wasn't real, and she, there's really not, the film doesn't actually at any point, you know, say that it is in fact
or go supernatural, fate, actually. Right, you know? It doesn't really ever go supernatural.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because there's no credits.
So,
and there's no monster.
Right. So, like,
there's no anything.
Which she thought the film was horrifying, and I got, like, I lived it vicariously through her, because, you know, the film itself, when you know what's going on, maybe isn't the scariest thing in the world, but if you think it's real, that's pretty terrifying. And I didn't tell her for a few months. Well, this is worse because you were young.
I mean, I think I went into that watching that film and I really liked it. I still actually really like it. I think it holds up a little bit better than most people say it does. And I went in when I first watched it. I knew what it was. I knew it was a horror film. I knew it wasn't real. But I just felt like it was one of those instances of it. You know, sometimes just getting lost is terrifying. Not knowing where you are. And like, you could make the argument like, oh, there's films like, you know, like that are like, oh, Man versus the Wild kind of thing. Like, this wasn't that film.
No, it was different from that.
Yeah. And I feel like there is just something to being lost, to not knowing what's going on, to having creepy imagery around, which, because you don't know context to it, you don't know. And I feel like all the interviews in the beginning of the film set up a decent amount of what eventually was going to happen. And I feel like the last shot of that film, like, I don't feel like anyone was particularly effing with them until then. And that, I feel like that was such a, like, I mean, it was one of those moments of, like, clutching your mouth and, like, wide-eyed and, like, oh, wow, that just happened.
It was a powerful thing. And I think the film was powerful. But I think that's what Pete's saying, is that it was, its uniqueness made it terrifying.
No, I'll agree with that.
Yeah,
I'll full disclosure. I will tell my Blair Witch story.
Oh, good.
I was actually in college at the University of Maryland at the time, so I was there. I was present in Maryland for most of the viral
Oh my God.
Stories that they were planting and stuff. And listening to the debate of people who lived in the area. Like, wait, is this real? I vaguely remember a story sort of like that. Because the whole thing was meant to vaguely, call back to stories that people remember hearing.
Yeah.
Half-remembered stories that you're not quite sure about.
I remember that. When I finally did go to see it in the summer, I was back here in Jersey, and I was fighting a cold and had been drinking the night before.
Oh, good.
So I puked. because of motion sickness.
Oh yeah.
That just killed me. Frank, I think you remember I had almost the same problem when we went to see Cloverfield.
That's right. Yeah.
I think Cloverfield is much worse with it.
Oh yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I had the experience of going back to Maryland the following fall and having all the people trying to take the freshmen out to the Blair Witch house, which they supposedly knew where it was.
Of course. Right.
And it was just so freaking annoying.
Yeah.
Although we did do that year, we had a, at the dorms, we had a decorate the hall for Halloween contest. And we filled the hallway with the stick men.
Oh, jeez.
Nice. There was stick men all over, black lights. I won't get into the whole thing, but nice. A lot of stick men, a lot of piled stones. And we genuinely terrified some people who didn't realize we were decorating the hall for Halloween.
So I guess 10 years later is enough time for them to remake the movie and, I guess, roll dice. I don't know how they're going to make it different. Sequel. Is it?
Yeah, it's the younger brother of the girl.
Oh.
What are we talking about?
The Blair Witch.
Movie?
The new movie.
Oh,
the
God.
Blair Witch.
Yeah, they are making that, aren't they?
It's out.
It is out, I believe.
I remember seeing ads on YouTube. I completely forgot. Yeah. It looks awful.
Which begs the question of whether or not it'll be scary because we're so familiar with the formula by now.
Hat tip to them. I don't remember. I don't know how many people of the original creative team are involved in this. But this is twice that Blair Witch has pulled off some pretty impressive bait and switch promotion for it.
Go on.
Because leading up to San Diego Comic Con, we didn't know there was a Blair Witch movie coming out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember this.
They had been promoting a movie they called The Woods.
Mm.
And they had the main hall for a preview of The Woods, and everything was decked out with the posters. They had all the Woods merchandise all over the hall. And I think it was like a 2-minute trailer that they showed. They showed that, and they ended it with somebody mentioning the Blair Witch, and then the new title, The Blair Witch, coming whenever it was. And when the lights came back up, all of the promotional material had been switched to the Blair Witch.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm telling you,
they pulled it off really well.
The original Blair Witch Project, and apparently this one too, should win an Academy Award for promotion.
I mean, you know, honestly, like, I want to see it. It didn't look great from the preview, but I did like the Blair Witch, and I want to see it. But I mean, hey, can we talk about Book of Shadows, right? Because that was
a
movie,
that.
Right?
Nope.
No, man.
So, I don't think so. I don't think it was.
Tie it back into the concepts of the show about underrated films. We'll leave you guys with this one. Speaking of Blair Witch and the found footage horror format, it has actually been a well-established one. You horror nerds are probably already done screaming at your podcast. Cannibal Holocaust 1980 was probably the first one.
What? I haven't heard of that film in ages.
Yeah,
it kind of makes sense.
Wasn't that a musical comedy?
Didn't the director get arrested for that one?
Well, yeah, in some places I think it's banned because people believe it's real.
Yeah,
which is
remembering.
Here's the story I actually want to leave you with. I believe on IFC a number of years ago, I heard about this film and I actually saw it and it was pretty interesting. So Blair Witch Project, 1999, significantly less known, is a film called The Last Broadcast from 1998, which also follows a film crew that ventures into a forest in search of a mythical creature to do a report on it. The mythical creature in this case is The Jersey Devil.
Oh, wow.
It is an interesting film, not well known.
Huh.
Saw it on, I believe it was on IFC. And yeah, it's...
Would you say it was good?
I think it's definitely worth watching, especially if you're a fan of the genre and you're a fan of New Jersey and the Jersey Devil. I think it's worth investigating and looking into. And, you know, it's this little indie film that didn't quite make it as big as the Blair Witch Project, but possibly for coincidence, like it, and promotion. It just wasn't as well known.
Mm.
Yeah, but very interesting. Mm. So thank you guys for sharing your horror film recommendations. If you out there in our listening audience have any horror film recommendations for Geektoberfest, please leave it in the comments of this podcast, and we will review it and then judge you based on what you've said.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.